Good afternoon. Oh, I guess it's still morning, isn't it? I'm Marianne Barasonic, and I have two guests today. Sharon Janassi is here in the studio, and she's been producing award-winning documentaries since 1979. And on the phone, we have Paul Koberstein, who's the founder and editor of Cascadia Times. Well, welcome both of you to KABU.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. So, now, the two of you have teamed up on the issue of air quality in Northwest Portland.
Right.
We've worked for about a decade together on this film and other issues. So, yes, we've got a long history on this issue.
So the film is What's in Our Air.
Right.
And that's playing tonight, isn't it?
It's tonight. We're showing it tonight at the Northwest Library on the corner of 23rd in Northwest Portland and Thurman at 6 o'clock.
Okay, so why don't you give our listeners a little bit of a rundown of what this film is about?
This is a documentary that I made about 10 years ago, and we filmed it in Oregon, Washington, and California. It deals with the whole issue of industrial air pollution and citizen neighborhood activism to try to do something about that.
So 10 years ago is when you made the film, and I'm sure there's been a lot done to change the issues, right?
Wrong. I should mention that it's an environmental justice issue, and we worked with the Northwest African American Ballet for the score. They scored it for us. And it's an environmental justice issue because the people who are most impacted by this kind of industrial pollution are people who live near the point sources that are right down, near the industrial area. And they're usually, or oftentimes, they're people of low-income families and often families with children. So it's a very serious matter. And really, the amount of progress over these years, because we've been working on this in Northwest Portland for about, well, just over 15 years, is just appallingly. I mean, considering what we know and what we've learned and what we've done to gather information about the airshed in Northwest Portland, the little progress that's been made is really pathetic.
Now, Northwest Portland always struck me as kind of an affluent area. So it seems kind of contradictory that this is seen as a low-income issue.
It is. Northwest Portland is very much a mixed area, and the areas nearest the industrial area, which is it's a huge historic industrial area called an industrial sanctuary here in Portland, the housing in that area, and there are other parts of Northwest Portland where we have mixed income, very much
mixed.
I think
it's kind of funny that it's called
renting.
An industrial sanctuary,
yeah,
like a wildlife sanctuary.
Right. This is an industrial sanctuary. And we have 8 oil companies that operate in Portland up and down the river. And then we have a major multinational foundry, which has 2 plants right on the edge of the neighborhood. And the residential area that we're talking about, which abuts the industrial area, is very, very dense.
Now, Paul, you recently wrote an article, I believe it was in Cascadia Times, about those oil tanks.
Yes, I did. There are, as Sharon said, there are 8 oil companies that operate their gasoline storage facilities in Northwest Portland, and that is all of Oregon's gasoline supplies are stored in one small area. And people would be interested to know those tanks leak gasoline fumes into the air, much like what happens when you pull up to a gasoline station, you fill up your tank, you get those fumes in your eyes, and they reek. Well, this happens on a massive scale in Northwest Portland. And one of the things that needs to be pointed out here is that this area is right across the river from low-income housing also in Northeast Portland. So it's not just an air pollution problem that's limited to the Northwest neighborhood.
That's a very good point. And we should also point out that Paul actually did some very interesting research, which we covered in our documentary that we're showing tonight. And Paul might want to talk about that, too.
So, well, we look at some of the oil companies bring their gasoline in by barge, and when they unload their gasoline into the tanks, some of it escapes as vapor into the air, and that vapor just wafts over North Portland, Northwest, and Northeast Portland, and contains a carcinogen called benzene, and it's quite dangerous. And the DEQ, our lovely Environmental Protection Agency in Oregon, let this go on without any kind of sanctions against the oil companies. And we did an article in Cascadia Times in 1999 exposing this problem. And then Sharon followed up with a lawsuit.
That's right. And the lawsuit resulted in a settlement with Chevron. It was a lawsuit with Chevron. It resulted in a settlement with Chevron, which led to 3 years of monitoring the airshed in Northwest Portland with very good equipment under the guidance of Dr. Robert Amundson. He's worked with us for many years monitoring the air.
So, this is a good example of how journalism and citizen activism can work together to really improve our neighborhoods.
So once the monitoring was done, then did that lead to any action?
No. No, it didn't. It was just amazing. It was amazing to us because we found a clear hot spot for lead that went from the foundry in descending order down to my house. What we did was we gathered dust at the neighbors' homes.
When you say the foundry, are you talking about ESCO?
Yes, that's right.
Okay. So just to give our listeners a little bit of background, can you tell us a little bit about ESCO and what they do?
Well, ESCO is a multinational foundry with two plants here in Portland. It's family-owned, non-union. It has using scrap metal, it puts them into a molten state, and then this goes into silicone sand molds, and they create their big mining equipment and like those big digger things that. So they do produce good things, but they were built in 1913, and so our problem with the plant is not that it exists, that it's there, it employs people, and we've never asked to have them closed down. But the problem is that they leak, so that a lot of the emissions that we have are fugitive emissions, and we have a problem with a suite of heavy metals, including manganese and lead. And chrome 6.
Okay, so you were able then to monitor the levels of pollutants because of the lawsuit about the gas tanks.
That's right.
So when you say these are fugitive pollutants, what do you mean by that?
That it's not what's coming out of the tank, out of the stacks, which are legally on the DEQ permit, and they say you can do so much emissions through the stacks and stuff. It's just what comes out of all over the plant when they open the doors and they have big vents in the roof and the joints between the pipes and, all the things that you would expect in an old plant that hasn't really retrofitted very much, not nearly enough. So that people who would come into Northwest Portland oftentimes say, "What is that horrible smell?" Especially when they're down near the industrial area, and that's usually ESCO. We also have the fuel smells, so we kind of go back and forth. Those are the two main ones.
So, Paul, have you been able to make any sort of link between health problems and the levels of pollution in that are coming out of both the gas tanks and the ESCO property?
I think we're totally closing in on that. That's a very good question. We did a study of ESCO's plant, and we found that the plant emits 64 different compounds and heavy metals into our air. 14 of them are carcinogens and at levels that are dangerous. We're talking about metals and chemical compounds like benzene and other things that don't cause cancer but cause disease like manganese. This fact should be really disturbing to people in Portland because, we have this reputation for being a clean, green city with people won't kill a slug in their garden because it'll kill a fish in a creek about 2 miles away. The problem is we are breathing all this toxic air, and, it's a danger to the citizens.
Now, Sharon, in your movie, I haven't seen it, so, but in the description it said that They were low-tech bucket monitors.
Yes, those were the first ones we did. That was about 1997, I think. We actually went to EPA and we got a $20,000 grant. And then Bob Amundsen, who I mentioned before, built for us these bucket monitors, and they were designed by Communities for a Better Environment in San Francisco. And they're very easy to use. And all you do is you just open a valve, which takes just kind of scoops in about 2.5 minutes worth of air into a bag, and then we send it to an independent lab. So we found in that study over 70 toxic compounds. That wouldn't be the heavy metals. The heavy metals we found in dust samples that we took on people's porches and around their houses.
So this seems like something that people who live in neighborhoods where they're concerned about what's going on could find a very inexpensive way to try to figure out if there is a problem.
Right, yes.
And now this isn't limited to just Northwest Portland either.
No, it certainly isn't. Because what we've discovered over the years is that the wind during the hot summer months tends to blow from the industrial area into Northwest Portland. The rest of the year, North and Northeast Portland gets it. So it's just that they are further, they're across the river, they may not know where that horrible smell is coming from, but they're getting it.
If I can add, we did a little study of this and found that you have to drive all the way to Hillsborough or Sandy to find air that is as good as the national average. Everything in between is up to twice as bad as the national average. And these are EPA numbers.
When you say the national average, do you mean for like overall pollutants?
This is a measure of the cancer risk in the air, of breathing the air. So the calculation is a very complicated one, but just to simplify, there's a very high risk in Portland. It's twice as high as the national average.
Well, we part of that, too, Paul, might be the benzene in this region is three times, I mean, the fuels are three times richer in benzene in this region. And that the DEQ isn't going to change that situation until 2012.
Yeah, benzene is one of, like I said, one of 14 compounds that's a real danger. And of course, one is lead. I want to mention one thing about ESCO. Their emissions include lead. They've increased by 32 times in the last decade, 128 pounds a year, and about 5 tons over 100 years. This is stuff that does not go away. It persists in the environment and just kind of sits there until it gets, you know, swept up by the wind.
Okay. And my guests today are Sharon Genasi and Paul Koberstein, and we're talking about the air quality in Northwest Portland. Paul, you just said that ESCO increased their emissions over the last, 30 years, was it?
Over the last 10 years, their emissions of lead, and there's an interesting story about why they emit lead, but bottom line is they've increased their emissions by 32 times since 2001.
Why have they been allowed to increase their emissions?
Well, you got to ask the DEQ about that. They are the ones that have permitted it. But the reason ESCO admits lead is because it's cheaper to run their process if they use raw materials that include lead. Lead-free raw materials, I guess, are too expensive. So they increase their profits at the expense of our health. We have to breathe their lead while they make the money.
Yeah, and it's interesting, too, that for so many years, when we had meetings with ESCO, they said, oh, we don't emit lead. That's not in our process.
Lead is only one of many things they emit.
Yeah.
So, Paul, I was reading another article of yours, and in it, Carter Webb, who is the manager of safety and environment, said that they're monitoring the emissions and the EPA categorizes them as a minor source pollutant. It doesn't sound like they're at all concerned about what they're emitting.
You know, the word minor is a very technical term. It has a definition legally under the EPA, but if you talk to some of the mothers and other people who live in the neighborhood, the pollution is anything but minor and could be quite dangerous.
Yes, we've had...
I'm talking about things like chromium-6. If you've seen the movie Aaron Brockovich, you know that chromium-6, which is also called hexavalent chromium, is one of the most dangerous carcinogens out there. And that's done at levels that exceed the danger level.
Yeah, and so, there are no safe levels for neurotoxins like lead and manganese.
There are no safe levels for lead, according to many, many experts.
Yeah.
But the industry has a very strong lobby in D.C., and they've been able to persuade Congress not to really tighten the strings on lead.
So is this an issue where there's federal guidelines that are kind of tying the hands of the city? Because I find it amazing that we have this industrial source of pollution, and it's so close, it's right downtown.
Yeah. And actually, the emissions, because we have, like, for example, Bob Amundsen lives clear down on the, you know, miles away down on the river. He smells it down there, smells ESCO down there. So it really, the whole city gets it. But what our primary concern is for especially the kids who live in close proximity to the plant, all those people. And we work with people who live like a block away, and it's just their life is just, it's just awful, because it's just like every day they smell the smell. And the dust comes into their homes. Then the particulate, of course, is very dangerous.
Now, have you documented any health problems that can be linked directly to the smell and the dust?
No, and you know, that's a route that we don't feel citizens should have to take. We haven't been able to because, for one thing, the data that's held by the Division of Health here in Oregon has not ever been accessible at zip code level or neighborhood level so that we could draw any real conclusions, like, say, the cancer registry data. Now I think they're going to start making that more available, which is great. But we feel that the precautionary principles should apply in a place like this, that in this country we're very backward. We let industry set the standards for what the public health deserves. And what happens, what should happen, is the precautionary principle, which says you have to prove that you're not going to do any harm before you emit these things.
So, no, instead we have to prove that they're not harmful instead of the industry. It's all, the onus is all on the back of the citizen.
Right.
That's pretty astounding. It seems that Portland is so progressive about environmental issues. Is there nothing being done on a city level?
No, nothing at all. I mean, we've been to the city. We've talked. We've met with Mayor Adams. He was very interested. He checked with his lawyers. They just pass it over to the DEQ. That's the DEQ's responsibility to regulate the airshed. And I think that most people have a kind of complacency. They think, oh, well, we're being looked after. They're taking care of us. But they're
not.
Part
of the problem is that we don't have all the science we need, too. It's, you know, it's an evolving area of scientific inquiry. And one of the areas, if I can just jump in here with this, it's called synergism. It's the idea that the combination of two chemicals is worse than they would be if they were breathed separately. And, of course, when you grab a lungful of air, you can breathe everything that's in it.
Yeah, so
it's
like
on a basketball team, you have two players. They're pretty good players. They're better when they play with each other. And in Portland, there's a number of chemicals that are stronger or more dangerous when they're in each other's company, like arsenic and manganese. There's a new study from Asia that shows that the dangers of breathing those two in combination can be quite significantly more than separately.
Yes.
So is there, like, not a lot of funding for this sort of research? It seems like this is the sort of thing that, I mean, DEQ should be on this.
Right.
This is why the EPA, they say they're lacking funding. So they're 10 years behind the requirements and the regulations for addressing this issue. They say they just don't have the money. And, of course, they don't really want to acknowledge the problem either.
But it also comes back to the lobbies in Salem, the legislative lobbies. Associated Oregon Industries is a very powerful lobby here in Oregon. And our legislators reflect a lot of that. I mean, if we had a legislature that really said we must clean up this state, we must maintain the green, really actually live the green image that we're projecting nationally, then something would happen if we could get that kind of backing. But we've had people move into our neighborhood from California who said they've never experienced anything like this, and they sold and just left.
Sharon, I think part of the problem is that the DEQ is not being entirely honest with the people in Northwest Portland either, or the, for that matter, the entire city. They knew in 1995 or 2005 that there was a chromium 6 problem in Northwest Portland coming from ESCA, and we didn't learn about that until last July.
That's right.
How were
they
just
sat on the data for like 5 years?
Yeah, we were always asking.
And didn't tell anybody.
Yeah.
And they've done the same thing with the other numbers. They just recently admitted they made a huge miscalculation in calculating the cancer rates from air toxics. So I think people are rather concerned that the DEQ is not doing what it needs to do to actually be honest as well as, of course, address the problem.
Now, the DEQ doesn't get any, what would be the motive for the DEQ to sit on this data?
Well, I think, you know, they get 70% of their funding from polluting, from permitting polluters to pollute. The thing is structurally crazy. It's similar to what was happening in the banking industry. You know, if the people who are paying them are the people they're supposed to be regulating.
How does that work? I mean,
they issue a permit. The polluters then pay the DEQ for the permit, and 70% of DEQ's funding comes this way.
So they have no incentive to shut these places down.
Yeah, if you look at the funding over the last 20 years, Oregon has been largely controlled by Republicans in Salem, and every year the budget keeps getting tighter and tighter and tighter. They ratchet the DEQ's budget down to the point where they're really not able to get in front of these problems and basically throw up their hands and say, industry, you take care of this. And trust them.
Well, that's working out well, isn't it?
Wow.
Yeah.
So, now, there was an article that you had written about where you had said that there was problems with the way that they were monitoring the sites in Portland because the way that they were monitoring was skewing the data.
There was some monitoring that was done in conjunction with the EPA where they selected a monitoring site that was very close to a site they already had that's been in operation since, I think, 1999. The concern was that they were collecting data that they already had. And
it wasn't industrial.
It suggested that they wanted to basically sweep the whole issue under the rug. When I say the DEQ has been not totally honest with the public, I would include the EPA in that. And they admitted that they got a number of things wrong when they were doing this study.
Well, part of the problem, too, is that the DEQ for years has been issuing and looking and doing their monitoring and issuing their data on the basis of averages. So they get average, so as if every one of us has a little equal packet of pollution, which is completely wrong and misleading. The people who live the closest to the sources are getting big spikes of manganese and lead and this stuff. We're getting smaller amounts.
Now
even spikes of mercury, which really scares me.
Well, it sounds like there's a whole lot of scary things coming out of there. And earlier you were saying, Sharon, that in the monitoring that you were able to do, that you were finding the lead levels were extremely high close to ESCO.
Yes.
And I kind of interrupted you there.
Yeah, it's a hot spot that ran from ESCO down to Johnson Street in diminishing amounts. I mean, any lead there's no acceptable level of lead or manganese. Both of these are neurotoxins. Manganese causes Parkinson's-like symptoms in people. So we all know it's terrible stuff. I mean, it does seem very puzzling, doesn't it, that in a day like ours, our intelligence, our what we know about these things, that they're still going on. But it is.
You know, what's interesting, Sharon, is that your group found that the most dangerous, the hottest of the hot spots is the corner of Northwest 25th and Vaughan, which happens to be right across the street from the main ESCO plant.
Yes, that's right.
Well, that's a strange coincidence, isn't it? But they're not the source of the pollution.
No.
I believe there's some wood stoves in that area. Is that right, Sharon?
Yeah, that's right. The head of the DEQ's main topic lately is wood stoves, and as if we all have wood stoves.
Well, or that the wood stoves are putting out the lead and
right.
the manganese and the mercury. Well, I thought it was interesting, Paul, that you were linking this issue to kind of a larger issue. Apparently, USA Today published a series of articles about how the EPA looks at levels of toxic chemicals near schools.
That's correct. Actually, the schools are kind of a surrogate for neighborhoods because... You know, each neighborhood has the same area as the school. So in all of Portland, most of the city is below national average. And put some numbers on it. Five or six of the schools are in the bottom 1% of the nation's schools. That's
well,
outdoor air, not indoor air.
When
this
you say
Portland.
Bottom 1%, you mean
dirtiest.
They have the dirt. Okay. They have
the dirtiest.
Dirtiest.
And all of the schools in Portland are in the bottom 37%, which is, big area, the entire Portland area.
Yeah. But there were several in our neighborhood that were at 2% of dirtiest air. And then what happened was that the EPA said, okay, well, we will monitor those schools that are in those areas to see if, you know, what we can find, because this data came out in USA Today was based on TRI data, not on actually monitored data.
When you say TRI data,
that's toxic release inventory data, and it's modeled.
That's federal data.
So what they did was they set up a monitor in Portland at Roselawn, where they're going to get mainly traffic or mobile sources, rather than put it where the 2%. One of the 2% schools was, or over at Roosevelt, I think it was in the top 2%. There were several schools in North Portland that were very in the same area. Any of those places, it's where those monitors should have gone instead of over at Roseland.
The hot spots are inner southeast Portland near a factory called East Side Plating, North Portland and Northwest Portland.
Yeah.
Chapman School in Northwest Portland is in the bottom 2%.
Right.
And they recently had an event, interestingly enough, where during lunchtime, the DEQ had to come out. They had the school called the DEQ because the odors from ESCO were so bad, the school didn't think it was safe for the kids to be outside, so they brought them all in at lunchtime during recess. It was probably not a very popular thing to do. It was, you know, among the kids, but, you know, it's for their health.
Yeah.
And are the parents aware
of yes. They're much more aware now than they have in the past. I mean, we've been hollering about this for many years. And I think parents are getting much more well informed. But it's like when we were filming in Richmond, California, where the Chevron refinery is, and I talked to Henry Clark. He said, "Well, it doesn't do us much good just to know how bad the situation is. It just makes us feel worse unless we don't do anything about it."
You know, I think Portlanders would be more aware of this, but there hasn't really been anything in the Oregonian. And Portland Public Schools have been, if anything, in denial. I think the leader on this issue in terms of covering it has been the Northwest Examiner.
Yes, that's right. Alan Clausen, the editor of the Examiner.
Okay, well, this has been a real eye-opening discussion. And your film, again, is playing tonight. Where?
Tonight at 6 o'clock. It's called What's in Our Air? And it was filmed in Oregon, Washington, and California, in both North Portland and Northwest Portland, in Seattle and in Richmond and in San Francisco in California.
Okay, and where's the movie going to be playing?
And it's going to show at 6 o'clock at the Northwest Library, which is on the corner of Northwest 23rd and Thurman.
Okay, and will you be there to answer questions?
Yes, I will.
Okay, well, my guests have been Paul Koberstein, and Sharon Genasi. Thank you so much for talking with us.
You bet. Thank you.
Thank you very much.